This is University Beats. I'm Mark Schreiner. For about a year, USF Associate Professor of Anthropology Heidi Castaneda had been planning a research trip that would take her to sites in Texas and Mexico, where many of the child migrants from Central America were passing through. Then around the time she arrived there, a worldwide spotlight also landed on the area as politicians and the media turned their focus to the border and the thousands of migrants fleeing their homes for what they thought would be the promised land of America. Heidi Castaneda joins us on University Beat to talk about some of what she saw. Heidi, we'll get to some of your trip and some of the things you saw in a moment, but first tell me, where did you visit and what was the purpose of this two-month research trip?
Well, these were actually two separate projects. One is an ongoing project on immigration and mixed-status families in Hidalgo County, Texas, which is the main city there is McAllen. It's right along the U.S.-Mexico border. It's currently considered one of the hottest spots in the nation for crossings, but it's also home to a large number of families who have immigrant backgrounds. So what I've been researching there for the past year and a half or so have been families who have members with various legal statuses. So usually it's children who are U.S. citizen and parents who may be undocumented. So about a year ago, I also started to plan a trip to Sinaloa, Mexico with a colleague from the University of Oregon, Kristen Yaris. There we were interested in looking at the issue of return migrants. However, when we got there, we found that the issue of child migrants from Central America, and indeed migrants from Central America passing through that particular Mexican state, was actually the more important issue that people wanted to discuss with us, and we were forming a project around that topic at this time.
This state of Sinaloa, Mexico, basically kind of the midway point for travel by these Central American migrants, a lot of them fleeing for whatever reason. But these are people that are so desperate to escape that they aren't paying smugglers and they're riding this train called La Bestia or the Beast. Why don't you tell me about that a little bit?
Sure. La Bestia is actually a freight train that people will hop onto in southern Mexico, and they hang on essentially the side or the top of it, and they risk life and limb. A lot of them, you know, end up experiencing extreme temperatures. They get robbed and assaulted along the way. So it's a very dangerous journey. These are migrants who aren't able to afford the smuggling fees. They're really the most desperate, the poorest of the poor, and they hop on these freight trains and sort of try their luck.
What kind of reception are they facing first in Mexico and then in Texas?
In both of the sites that I mentioned, these are transit sites. So they're not sites of reception. They're not sites where people are trying to integrate migrants. Rather, they're sites where local communities and localities and municipalities are being affected by the transit migration. I think you see a range in both countries as far as understanding what the causes and the processes of this migration is and what to do about it ultimately. In Mexico, for example, we saw people who were very much willing to provide food and showers and some basic support to migrants who were coming off of these trains. There's stories of people, you know, throwing sandwiches up on the trains to feed them. In Sinaloa State, we encountered religious organizations that had places where they could sleep. There were soup kitchens where people could get a hot meal. So you saw a lot of small encounters of solidarity and support along the route in Mexico, in addition to encounters of violence that people are having. So they're experiencing both. When they come to the United States, I think you see very much the same thing happening in the communities. You have some instances of solidarity and support. In McAllen, for example, there's a temporary migrant shelter that's set up where we spent some time, and it is set up by Sacred Heart Church in McAllen. And it's not only the religious communities who have come together to help migrants who are being released from detention and who need a shower and a hot meal and fresh clothes, but it's often the municipal authorities and the public health authorities are coming together. The city of McAllen, the county of Hidalgo provided medical resources, busing to help these migrants out. So you're seeing communities rallying behind this in some communities, but in other communities, of course, you're seeing these protests where people are being welcomed with signs of hatred, essentially, at the border.
Let me take the other side of that for a moment and say that maybe it's not hate. It's the argument that these migrants should apply to come to America the right way, let's say. And it's not necessarily hate. It's more of, you know, let's take care of who we have here and opposed to allowing people in, quote unquote, the wrong way.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I think what we have here is an instance where the issue of immigration reform and what we want to do with our immigration policy in the United States is coming to a point. In previous decades, I think the issue of children fleeing violent situations would have not been as controversial. However, we're looking at a time in our history where 1 year after stalled comprehensive immigration reform was under debate, we see no movement in Congress at the moment to do anything about the immigration issue. So I think tensions have boiled over into new directions with this particular issue. And so I agree, it's really showing us that there's some unresolved tensions in the U.S. policy around immigration and who we want to allow into the country and who we want to give asylum to, for example.
You also had a chance to talk with a number of these migrants. What are the stories that they're telling you? What would you want people to know about these folks?
Well, I think the most important thing I learned is that this isn't a black or white situation. These aren't people who are intending to come illegally or they're not opportunists. Actually, every case of a family I talked with, another family member already lived in the United States, often multiple family members. So a lot of times this was an issue of family reunification, where women were coming to stay with their husbands or children with their parents. In some cases, they had the right to come join their parents. So I met families in Sinaloa, for example, who said that they actually had a legal opportunity to join the father in the U.S., but they couldn't afford the lawyer's fees. So for them, the only route was to take this train north. So sometimes there were some prohibitive legal expenses that prevented people from doing things the right way, you know, in quotes. But I think the larger issue is that everybody seems to have somebody in the U.S. already with no opportunities for reunification with those family members. And again, it goes back to the way our immigration policy is structured, because for Central Americans, the majority, about 60%, are in the country on an unauthorized basis. And many of the others have what's called temporary protective status, which there are no mechanisms for family reunification.
Also, there's some of these, I don't want to say misconceptions, but, you know, you hear the stories, the concern about maybe these migrant children haven't been inoculated against certain diseases. They may be bringing certain diseases into the country. There are possibly criminals among the migrants who are fleeing to the United States. Those are kind of, you say, misconceptions, are they not?
Yeah, I think largely they're misconceptions. I mean, certainly these are children and families who are living in conditions of poverty. So you will see illnesses associated with poverty. And more importantly, I think what I saw in South Texas is that you're seeing illnesses associated with travel and the detention process. So, for example, in McAllen, there was a concern about issues like scabies and lice. A lot of these are illnesses that you get from crowded conditions. And these are crowded conditions that they're experiencing along the journey and then in detention in the Border Patrol facilities. Other people in the media have suggested that there might be bringing infectious diseases of various sorts, and for the most part, those are largely overblown, all the way to describing things like Ebola coming across our borders, which is actually not very possible. On the other hand, there are many diseases of poverty that I think we should be paying more attention to rather than creating this scenario of contagious children coming across the border. I think that's a very well-worn narrative in U.S. immigration. Many groups of immigrants over the past 200 years have been viewed as potential sources of contagion. And so I think this is very much in line with what we've seen over the previous two centuries of immigration to the U.S., where immigrants are viewed as carriers of infectious disease. And it's a way of othering. It's sort of a standard trope that we see play out in the immigration scenario. What's new here is, of course, that it's being applied to children, and also that it's being applied to children who, for the most part, I think, are fairly sure are fleeing very violent circumstances, and they're not opportunists.
Where do you think the United States needs to go with its immigration policies? I mean, obviously you're an anthropologist and you're not a policy expert, but sure, as someone who's been on the front lines and seen this for yourself, where do you think we should go from here?
As an applied anthropologist, we try to make suggestions for long-term solutions. And so I think the most important thing from my end, I intend to keep studying this along with colleagues in Mexico, because I think understanding the push and pull factors associated with this migration, as well as the impact on communities, is really important. So I think that we do have to take a step back and not make rash decisions about what could we do to have a quick fix. This is an issue that has been in the making for two or three decades now, associated with different things happening in Central America. And I don't think there's a quick fix available. One thing that I do feel strongly is that increased militarization of our borders is going to just provide more opportunities for organized crime in Mexico. We've seen that over the past roughly 10 years. We've seen that every time we strengthen our borders, we build more walls, it creates opportunities for people to make money off of this. And so you see increase in organized crime in places like northern Mexico because there's money to be made. There's an opportunity for people there. So it creates more insecurity along our U.S.-Mexico border, I think, in a lot of ways. At the same time, surely children who are coming across and the families who are coming across have a right to due process. We have a process in place for them to seek legal relief through the Trafficking Victims Protection Act and through our refugee policies. The issue right now is that the system's backlogged. So at the current moment, the most important thing is to get legal representation for these children, to examine each individual case of the families of the children, to see if there is opportunity for relief in some cases. Now, again, it's not black or white. Some people will be granted a status and some people won't. And those people who won't likely will be detained and repatriated. But for the most part, following the due process is really important at this point. And for that, there hasn't been resources for the immigration judges and for legal representation for the children. That's certainly one important next step. Beyond that, again, I think you know, just paying attention to the conditions in the countries that they're coming from, there's a reason why they're coming from those three countries, Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala. There's a reason why we're not seeing a lot of children coming, for example, from Nicaragua, which is right next door. And a lot of that reason has to do with U.S. foreign policy in that region over the past 20, 30 years and conditions of instability that I think would be better served with real social and economic development rather than further securitization measures, which is what a lot of people are pushing for at the moment.
Are you planning at any point to make a return trip back to these areas? What are you doing next with the research that you've done so far?
Yes, in both cases, I'll be returning to the field sites. I'm continuing the projects down in South Texas and also simultaneously working on strengthening the project with colleagues in the state of Sinaloa to look at transit migration. Most studies of transit migration have focused on the southern route from the Guatemalan border up till about Mexico City, or they've focused on the actual crossing of the U.S.-Mexico border. And what we're looking at is that vast stretch in between Mexico City and the border, what happens there. And in many cases, it's actually the most dangerous stretch because that's where a lot of sort of local-level crime affects the migrants traveling on the train and on the other routes.
And we'll certainly keep in touch with you, find out more when you get back from your next trip. USF Associate Professor of Anthropology, Heidi Castaneda, thank you very much for joining us on University Beat.
Thank you.